All right, here we are on, we did three, right?
Yes.
So we're on four of the spiritual maxims.
What page is
that? Page 42 in this, 42 in that book. Page 42, 42, that's the answer to life. That's the meaning, the answer to the meaning of life.
Say what?
42.
42 is the answer to life?
Yeah.
Can you double that and have two lives then?
No. Do you know where that's from?
Yeah.
What's the name of that book? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Is that
University?
Terry Pratchett?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful series of books. And at the end of the book, it's kind of funny because, you find a lot of stuff out. But anyway, it turns out that some aliens are going to they're building an intergalactic freeway, and it's going to be going right through our galaxy, so they're going to destroy the Earth so they can put the freeway through, this intergalactic freeway. And apparently they've notified us, but because we don't have the technology to receive the notification or something, we don't get the notification. So there's this whole process that goes on. But anyway, it turns out that the whole universe, maybe I might be getting my books mixed up, but the whole universe turns out was created as a computer to answer the question, what is the meaning of life? And in this book, some girl sitting in a pub somewhere in some podunk country somewhere in the world, she spits out the final answer of what is the meaning of life, and the world can come to an end now because it's, and the meaning of life is 42.
I didn't read the book, I just saw the movie, which is part of the story.
Yeah.
Why 42 this one?
What's the 42 there?
Hello, it's the meaning of life.
Yeah, they built a supercomputer, and they asked it, what is the answer to the ultimate question? And after millennia, it came out and said 42. And they didn't understand the answer, so they had to build another computer to explain the answer.
It was good enough for me. I don't know. You'll have to work on it yourself from there. 42 makes me happy.
I get the gist of it.
42 makes me happy.
It was just a random thing, or there's something else.
Oh, boy, I haven't read about the author enough. I bet there's something to it. There's some little trick that he's
Maybe
got in
was
there.
42.
That's true. Yeah.
Then I like the guy who creates planets, because they had to recreate the Earth after it was destroyed. They had to put it back to the way it was, all living things and everything.
Yeah, that's a great scene when they're constructing the planet. Anyway.
It was prolific. There were lots of books that he wrote.
Yeah.
And wizards and...
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all very creative. They're good. They're good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Is there a segue to go from that to the practice of the presence of God? All right, let's see, 40. So, well, we're on page 42, so here's the meaning of life. This is what he meant. Go to page 42. Is everybody doing all right? Mm-hmm. Are we okay? Okay, good. When we are busied or meditating on spiritual things, even in our time of set devotion, whilst our voice is rising in prayer, we ought to cease for one brief moment, as often as we can, to worship God in the depth of our being, to taste him though it be in passing, to touch him, as it were, by stealth. Mm. Oh, that's sweet. When we are busied or meditating on spiritual things. Okay, so that's pretty much all the time. You're always either busy or meditating. I don't know if it divides exactly down the middle, but so when we are busied or meditating on spiritual things, even in our time of set devotion, while our voice is rising in prayer, we ought to cease for one brief moment, as often as we can, to worship God in the depth of our being, to taste him though it be in passing, to touch him, as it were, by stealth. This is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful idea. I like it a lot. Because there's a few things locked up in here. One, he says there, to touch him as it were by stealth. That's very important, especially in the period of time when we're not fully convinced of grace, when we're not fully convinced that we are holy, that we can actually sit and assume God's intimacy with us, that we could actually sit and write a paper on what the things he's got against us. You know, when you're in that state and you're really struggling, this is a nice idea that by stealth, you know, even despite the fact that you don't belong there, like that woman, oh, that's a story, that's a Jesus story, when that woman, she was sick and she, Jesus was walking through, and of course there were hordes of crowds pressed in around him as he was walking, and she thought, if I can just by any means just touch the hem of his robe, I'll be healed, you know. So she manages to do that, and Jesus immediately knows, and he stops. He says, who touched me? And the disciples are like, are you crazy? How many thousands of people are touching you, pressed up against you right now? What do you mean, who's touching me? And then this woman comes forward and confesses it. So there's this
touch.
What's that?
He could only feel that touch.
Yes, he felt. He said he felt the power go from him, you know.
So. He felt the power go from him.
Yeah, he felt it move, the power go to her in her because of her faith. And so that's a big indication right there, you know, that she didn't have permission. She didn't have a right. She didn't have his promise. She didn't anything. She just, in her own faith, if I can just touch him, I'll be healed. And sure enough, the faith healed her. And so I think he's alluding to that kind of faith on our parts. You know, like we're sitting there trying to do our worship or trying to do our meditation. And really what we're paying attention to is like what you said, you know, my mind is all over the place. I can't think properly. And then I'm thinking all these weird things and I'm distracted. So what he's saying is use this technique to shut that up. Say, okay, sure, that's true. But maybe even right now, maybe even in the midst of thinking about how disgruntled my mind is, how disquieted my mind is, I'm just going to stop thinking about that for a moment and just try and just touch the hem of God.
So when she touches him, isn't that selfish? I mean, sitting in front, you know, of Thakur yesterday, I just couldn't say, let him be okay. I was saying, help me to surrender. But isn't that selfish? Make me better? Make him better? We ask him, there's so many people in the world sick. But just asking for that instead of other good things.
I don't think asking for good things for other folks is selfish, even if they're motivated because you want him to be around. I think that's a form of love. I think that's a beautiful thing. Selfishness would be to be praying for someone to suffer because you want them to suffer, or, you know, praying that you get your own way about something. No, I don't think so. I think the mind goes to that space needlessly. You know, that's that question, well, isn't the desire for God a desire? It's like, no, it's not. In that particular case, it's because it's a desire for something you have, for something that you are. And so you can't desire what you already have. No, I don't think so. Yeah. And even if it is, so what? You just tell them, Thakur, I care about this person so much, and I don't want to see them sick, and I don't want to lose them, and I really, please, I accept whatever your choice is, whatever your decision is, but please help me find comfort, or help him find comfort, or help us find comfort, like that. I think the bottom line is we don't need to drag our insecurities before the Lord every time we want to get a hug. You know, when you're like running toward your mom or your dad, you know, when you're a kid, you don't have to sit there and question all of your motives and question all of your whatnots. You know, it's the love that's drawing you and the comfort of that love. You just go and enjoy the love, enjoy the comfort. That's how it should be. And so in our meditations, that's how it should be. That we run to the Lord, we take his comfort, we enjoy the attraction, we enjoy the communion, and we enjoy it even more as we understand it has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with the nature of love and grace, mercy. That it's because of that mercy, and it's infinite, we're told, we hear. So infinite mercy, then we start contemplating infinite mercy instead of our infinite guiltiness. You know?
I'm just wondering, Swami, if she feels while praying that, or if anyone feels while they're praying that they're being selfish, then you might as well pay attention to that. Say, okay, if I'm being selfish, I'm not asked anything. I'm okay with what is.
Yeah, I mean, you can deal with it any way that you want, but don't let it prevent you from going before the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can discriminate your way out of it. You can just, frankly, what I do in situations like that, I'm like, well, Lord, if we're going to start listing the things that are wrong with me, we're going to be here a very long time. So why don't we just know that it's going to take grace, and I'm going to think about that grace instead of the reasons I need it. I'm just going to think about your grace. And that will increase the intimacy, increase the closeness, and the trust, which is necessary. That's the whole thing I was saying, you know, to accept infinite mercy, you need infinite humility. That's that willingness to know, God, I can't fix this. I can't ask for anything that's not selfish at some level. I can't do anything that's not self-serving at some level. You know, Vivekananda says in one place in Karma Yoga, he says, make it your life's work to perform a single, utterly unselfish act in your life. And if you are able to perform a single unselfish act, you will have your realization.
Only single?
Yeah.
That's true.
Means nothing we have done ever is to that level.
Yeah, and it's really not, which is why we have a body. You know, if it was even selfishness, quote, that kept Thakur in his body. You know, he had to reestablish that selfishness every time he was bringing himself out of samadhi. He would say, the love of the devotees would draw him into his body, or I need a glass of water, or, you know, give me a sweet, or it was always some selfish need that he used to pin himself at a lower consciousness so that he could communicate with us. You know, he had the opposite problem that we have. So it's like that. So we have to just come to the notion that as in our ego self, which is really where we live, you know, it's most of us just live in our ego self. And we just have to come to understand that as long as we are in that space, we have nothing to give. We have nothing. We are utterly in need. You know, they're even the world, even our acts of service are tainted with ego, you know, and cause pride and delusion, a sense of superiority, a sense of I'm helping you, I'm serving you, you know, I'm being good, all of those things. But does that mean we don't do anything? Absolutely not. It means that we come to an understanding of our relationship with grace, with the Beloved. That we are beautiful not because of ourselves, but because God is beautiful in us. You know?
I don't think it's wrong to ask for help.
Not at all.
But you can learn to accept whatever is given. You know, you can ask God to help you with your problems, but to accept whatever God gives you. You can ask for help for other people, but leave it up to God of how they help that person.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have much choice on that, but it is good to be conscious of it, to say it. Jesus says that's that, and Thakur says that too, actually, that's the highest prayer.
Yeah.
You know, let your will be done. Mm-hmm. Because God operates only from pure love, so naturally his solution is the best solution.
Whether good or bad.
To us, whether we think it's good or bad. If God did it, it's always good.
Every time, do what's best, what you think is best. They say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave it to him. It's difficult.
Yeah. And
no,
part of...
you can accept that.
That's it. That's the process. That's the process. That's the kernel of what we're trying to accomplish through surrender. Because you can only surrender when you know you have no options left.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you think you have an option, you're not going to surrender. So we have to come to an understanding, we have nothing. God needs nothing from you. The world needs nothing from you. You can't help the world. You can't change the world. You can do nothing in your ego space. So everything that you do, if it's being motivated by those things, forget it. Forget it. The only way that God can manifest is by our response to mercy. You know, for the love of God, we do this. For the love of the divinity in others, in things, in ourselves. You know, that's a beautiful switch. That's a beautiful switch when that begins to happen inside yourself. When you stop behaving out of fear, stop behaving out of trying to get somewhere or get something or accomplish something, when you actually have the thought of giving good behavior to the beloved, you know, I'm not going to do that, Lord. I know that that does bring good fruit for me or our relationship or my peace of mind, you know, and when you can actually make tangible things that you do, if you can actually directly give them the motive of love, that's what a sweetness that is. What a sweetness, what a wonderful experience. Those things really change our life. That's where strength comes from, which is why grace is so emphasized, why love is so emphasized. Love is the ultimate value. It's the thing that changes everything and everyone, you know?
I think people have to become receptive to grace. So there was a thing in Christianity for a while where people say, everything is by the grace of God, so I can't do anything, and God chooses whoever to save. And to me, that's the extreme. Instead of seeking God, people just say, forget it. You know, God decides whoever he's going to save.
Yeah, but that's, and the problem with that, and definitely, certainly it's manifesting in that attitude, that would be the big misunderstanding. If you think I'm saved by grace, so I don't have to do anything, then you have no idea of the grace. You have no concept of grace. You don't. The concept of grace or the response to grace is worship. You know, you cannot stand before God and do nothing and think that you understand grace. Understanding grace creates saints. Understanding grace creates saints. And so if you're not a saint, you don't understand grace. You know, so saving, yes, it is true that we're saved by grace alone. But our job is to understand that grace, to realize exactly what that means, because in that is our renewal. In that is our hope, really, you know. So he's saying, so, you know, when you're busied or meditating on spiritual things, even in your time of devotion. So he's meaning that this is, even in the times when we're sitting consciously or trying to sit consciously in front of God, use these little bursts of new thinking to try and go even closer than what you're experiencing. Make a new assumption that takes you even closer, you know, and just even by stealth, you know, touch God. Yeah. It's like that. Like, I was having just to personalize it, because I have to personalize everything. At night, I have to wash Takor's face, you know, with the washcloth, washes his head and face. Well, when I first started doing that, I was terrified to do that. You know, I was so careful. I didn't want my hand to touch him, because my Lord, if that woman burned his foot in the gospel by touching his foot, that statue would fall over and break into 19 pieces if I touched it. You know, that was my feeling about it. So I was like, really careful. Don't let my fingers touch the thing. And I went on like that for a long time, actually, for a couple of years probably here, thinking like that. And it's only been the last year or so where one night I was doing that. I was trying to be careful and wash him. And this image of remembering my mother and how she would wash my face when I was a little kid. And how I would always laugh because she was so utterly uncareful. She would just,
yeah, right,
just go for it, you know? It's like, and when she would wash my hair, I was like,
yeah.
And I remembered that and I laughed. And I understood that I was being given a permission through a different context. And so, I guess this is why we shouldn't talk about ourselves. But anyway, that's become a great enjoyment of mine now, is that I remember my mother, and I invoke my mother when I wash Thakur's face, and I delight in teasingly being brutal with him, you know, behind his ears.
I was wondering where the scratch came on his cheek. Are you serious?
No, she's not. She can't possibly be serious. I don't.
That was a good one.
Yes.
She gets a couple.
Yeah. So how did we come? Why were we talking about it?
Because that's how we grow in grace. It's like we contemplate that our situation. We have to own our unworthiness, you know, to know, to be aware that really it's true. If I was, you know, to presumptuously touch Thakur, that it would be like a scorpion stinging him, and he'd run across the room and dump over that big thing of Ganga water and say, salute me from a distance, you know, and then I would have to start doing my pranams at the door at the back of the auditorium, you know. And so to not do that then, we can either live in fear, where we're so careful about everything that we're doing, or we learn about love. We learn about how our mother washed our face, and we remember how she washed our hair, and remember how, yes, it was rough, but how as a kid you used to laugh, you know, and joke, and she would laugh back, you know, like that. And to develop that relationship, because God showed me what love was through my mother. And so now he's teaching me how to serve him. Invoke that same love and serve me. And so, but we can only come to that when we understand or come to any kind of understanding of our own shortcoming, our own pain, you know, our own unworthiness of that. And not to shrink from it, but to lay down and say, oh my God, thank God you are who you are. Thank God that you are. Thank you for that you are for who you are. That your nature is love. That your nature is compassion. That your nature is intelligence. That I can literally put everything that I am in that basket and know that it's okay because it's your nature that makes it okay.
Right.
You know. So he's saying that here. He's saying so. No matter what you're up to, even in your highest spiritual state, you know, when you're feeling the most confident in it, even at that time, set it aside and try and slip in an even more intimate touch. You know, make a presumption that you're afraid to make, that will make you depend on grace to do it. You know,
Maharaj, let's talk about how you feel Thakur sitting there, right? How do I, you know, I feel everywhere there's Thakur.
Oh, wow, good.
So not just in that image, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's the truth of it for sure. But really the trick is to find it in yourself, and then it's everywhere. You know, if you find it in yourself, if you can find that place where the love of God comes into your manifestation, manifests as your being, as what you are, then that goes everywhere. If you can build that shrine in the heart so that when you think of God or you say the name of God or you read about God or you enjoy a sunset, you've become aware of where that happens and you can go there anytime and be in the company of love, be in the company of the divine.
So enjoying beauty, like I was driving down and I see the purple plum, you know, trees, and I just felt, you know, and then I said, no, you shouldn't be feeling that way.
Oh my goodness.
No.
Why?
You know, because Rinal is not well.
Oh. Well, there is always someone not well. Can we not look at flowers when somebody's not well? Always, there's always somebody not well. There's always some pain. What we have to work on is not stopping to look at the flowers.
He doesn't want to stop.
but ultimately to find even the pain of other of the pain of life beautiful. That's a touchy one.
Yeah.
But there is beauty in that too.
Yes.
That's how we surrender.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we surrender. We try and we do that because we say, okay, wow, that person, that's happening because of God's love. Because God loves that person. And be like, oh my God, how can that be a manifestation of love? And that's how God stretches our mind. That's how he gets, he shoehorns our mind so he can fit his foot in it. How's that for an image? You know, he's always teaching us. He's like, if we're just comfortable, we think, oh yeah, the world is love. That's really great. But we don't grow in our understanding of love because everything's just like we want it to be. So he comes in and says, well, this is love too. And he burns your house down. You know, and suddenly you're like, oh my God, where do I find my peace now? My house is burned down, you know, blah, 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 my shrine, I don't have my shrine anymore. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Well, maybe, you know, and how you deal with that and what you learn from it is between you and the beloved. But you learn things like, wow, houses are not safe to put my happiness in. Wow, partners aren't forever. Wow, families grow up and disperse. You know, and in that, somehow I have to keep adjusting my understanding of where my peace comes from, where the beloved is, and how he communicates with me, so that my mind expands. And that's why he wants you to take joy not only in your children, but everybody's children. Why? Because if you're like Holy Mother and take joy in everybody's children, you don't even need any children of your own. And if your children of your own then are dorks and mistreat you, you've got the whole world to turn to, you know. So little by little, Mother teaches us that. She forces the mind open.
Yeah, there's some people want God to make the world perfect.
Yeah,
and they're wondering why God allowed Adam to fall, allows people to make mistakes, allow people to suffer, you know, all kinds of things like that. But the thing is, that pushes people towards God, you know, because God is the only thing that will give you permanent happiness. Nothing else will.
Yeah, and my whole reaction to that whole blaming God for anything or asking those questions, because those are always rhetorical, you know, questions. How can you ask that? Really what you're asking is yourself. Why did I choose to reach through my senses for enjoyment? You know, and if you can answer that, then you've answered why Adam fell. Why do I not feed the hungry today? I have extra money, I have extra food, I have extra time, and yet I didn't go looking for hungry people today. So it's not God that let those people go hungry today, it's me that let those people go hungry today. And so all of those questions that we have for God are really questions that we're asking ourselves, and we're the ones that have to come up with the answer for it, you know, if those are requirements for a perfect world. But the sages say that as to be mature is to know that every moment is perfect, that this world is exactly as it should be, that only in this world as it is everybody being taught a lesson simultaneously about the nature of God.
That's tough.
Very difficult. That's because that's the pinnacle. That's the highest consciousness, you know, for us, to see that perfection in all things, to see God everywhere. You know, so that's why it's difficult, because that, you know, that's like somebody going and taking the last test question out of calculus 4 and giving it to you while you're in geometry class in 8th grade. You'd be like, oh my God, I can't even read that equation, let alone find an answer to it. So we look at that and we think, oh, it's ridiculous. But we'll get there. We'll get there. There will come a time where each one of us will see the perfection of all things, see God everywhere. You know, we just don't lose heart.
Do you see perfection in change?
I mean,
it's inevitable.
It is, yeah, but it's not in the change that. Does that make sense?
Yes. I don't know.
It's not, the perfection is not in the change, because if something's constantly changing, what can you set your idea of perfection on? What brings perfection to the changing is the knowledge and confidence of the unchanging. that part of you that does not change, which upon which all of the change is happening. So you see, if we look at the surface of the ocean, there's no peace. The water's moving and splashing about all the time. But go under the surface, and there's tranquility, stillness, peace, beauty, you know, a lot of stuff. But it's just under the surface of the water. And so in our world, that's what we're trying to do. Yes, the mind is always full of noise. Yes, the world's full of problems. Go deeper. There is a hum of the beloved that is steady and still and beautiful in it all. Go to that place. Go to that place and find the tranquility that came with your image of God that's inside of you, that beloved name that is you. Bring that and manifest that and take security in that.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you go to that place?
Yes, well, first you have to find it, and that's through your meditation, through japa. Japa will show you that place. Japa, there's many techniques of japa. One, just being in the presence of the beloved. If you can imagine Thakur's presence, you know, initially it's imagination, then you'll find Thakur's presence because that's where it leads. That's one way. One way is to watch the mantra happen in your mind once it's going, and then to try and find out where it's coming from. Walk around it, listen to it, and think, understand things like they say that the mantra is God, that the name and the form cannot be separated. So if you're sitting there saying the name of God, He is present there. Where is He present? How is He present? You know, thinking things like that, watching the mantra, trying to source where the mantra is coming from, paying attention to the inspiration that comes from the mantra, the warm feelings, I assume, maybe. You know, that radiant love that's there around the mantra after you've said it for a year or two. Find out where that's coming from and go there. And memorize where that is in yourself, you know?
The alarm.
Do you have to go? So he's saying, so when you're busy, when you're meditating on spiritual things, so it doesn't matter when, whenever, stop and have a moment with the beloved. Stop and make a presumption while at the same time acknowledging that it's a presumption. You know, so even though you feel like you can't touch Thakur, touch his face, stand in front of him and say, I want to touch your face, and I can't on my own. Can I touch your face? As my father, as my mother, as my friend, as my lover, will you let me touch your face? And stand there until you feel the permission, and then touch his face. That's how we find that space. That's how we find grace. That's how you find grace, yeah, because it's that grace when you've contemplated and sat there in stillness waiting for the response, you know, because there is a feeling, there is a response from the beloved when you do something like that. Wait for the permission. If the permission doesn't come, then either sit there and wait for it, you know, or don't and come back and try again later, you know, but whatever, that's how we grow in grace, though. I remember doing this one time when I was in India in 99, and I had had my experience with moksha prana, and I was staying at Mayavati, and I was thinking I was going to be enlightened any minute. I mean, I really and literally, I thought it was so. Oh God, those were such beautiful times. But of course, I was so far anyway. Blah blah blah. So, and I remember going, I was taking a walk, and I was praying, and I was doing a meditation while I was walking at Mayavati. And I stood there, and I told God, I said, you know, I really want to be able to do a pranam to you and mean it. I don't want to bow to you right now without absolutely knowing that I'm fully engaged in this thing. And the thing that was very, very difficult for me at that time, it took me probably 16 or 17 years before that even came close. You know, I wanted to do it that night as I was on my walk. I wanted to lay there in the grass and do an Ashtanga Pranam and mean it. And I stood there and realized that there was no way that I could do that. There was no way that I could do an authentic pranam to the beloved, because I didn't have that relationship. I didn't have that understanding in myself. And so after I had stood there for a while, not able to move, because every move felt inauthentic, I compromised. I said, I can't do it. And that kills me. This is my quest. I want to be able to do this. And so I just did a placeholder. I did the best I could and offered it and got up. But I kept that in my mind, you know, that I wanted to come to that state, to where I could authentically pranam, you know, to the beloved.
I mean, how does one know when you're talking to God that it's being answered? Because you're talking, like I'm talking, and I'm only answering. Well, I don't know.
No, well, who are you?
Yeah,
God. Yeah. There's, and not that you can take every thought of yours as God, because there's levels of what's going on in the mind, right? If you're in the choppy wave part of the mind, you really can't depend on any of that being from God. That's desires and sanskaras and, you know, all of that stuff going on. But if you're in that quiet space after a good meditation or during a good meditation, and you ask a question or put yourself in the presence in that state, then those things that come more as an intuitive feeling, like they come, but they're not trite and, you know, straightforward English answers usually. Mm-hmm. It's something that comes from something very deep inside of you, a permission or a whatever. And so those things you can pay attention to, you know, and you can know. Because Thakur, God, is always communicating with you. And that's why it's so important for us to get out of the noise of our ego. Because that is what is not allowing us to hear. You know?
It's okay then to, like, sometimes I imagine when at the shrine, the Thakur is there, mm-hmm. and I touch his feet. And then I say, no, I should probably touch Ma's feet. Because Ma, I'm so full of ego.
Because what?
I'm so full of ego. You know, touching Thakur's feet, so it's better to walk, you know, touch Ma's feet.
Yeah, and that's
put Ma down then?
No. Yeah. Ma's like that. Ma doesn't have the same requirements.
Yeah.
Mother is much more. You never.
Lenient.
Yeah, because she also suffered great pain when impure people would touch her feet, but she would just sit there and endure it.
Yeah.
Because that's motherhood, you know. That's motherhood. Thakur would throw a fit and run across the room and get the water and.
Really?
You know. Yeah. I say that playfully, but yeah, he did. But Mother didn't, you know. And when somebody would scold the devotees for touching her feet, she would like, oh, let them do it. So, but here's the thing about it. When you said that, this is a thought occurred to me. If you acknowledge your egotism and you acknowledge your unworthiness, I really think at that point Thakur opens his heart for you to touch his feet. It's when we touch his feet without thought, or we touch his feet thinking that we're good enough. You know, I'm a devotee, I can touch his feet. If we base it on anything that we are or we think or we do, it's going to hurt him. When we touch the beloved, it's always because he allows it. It's always because of grace, always because of graciousness, always because of compassion. And so if you approach the Lord with that humility, that's when he'll invite you right next to him. You can go up and sit right on the shrine in his lap, like Thakur used to climb up in Mother's arms on the shrine, you know. He could do things like that. Why? Because he understood grace. He understood it. You know, he had let go of all sense of ego self. And there was no presumption in it whatsoever. There was only love.
I had a problem with spiritual people for a while, you know. Come across a person, you feel the spiritual atmosphere, I'd be afraid to shake their hands or something like that. Then, you know, but they say, come here, you know. And then after a while, you find out those people are very sympathetic to people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask for their help, they will help you. So, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so you do it always based on the love that the beloved has. We grow because of the love of God. We become pure because of the love of God. We become whole because of the love of God. We become righteous because of the grace of God. You know, it's like all of that, and we need to know that, because it's very important for our spiritual life to know that, because if you don't know that, then you become smug. You become one of these religious people that's proud of being religious, which, you know, there's nothing ickier than that to me.
What about all these people that preach against wrongdoing, then they're caught doing what they're preaching against?
Well, yeah, and that's why I always say, if you find a fault with someone else, the first thing to do is to sit there and do an inventory. All right, why is this bothering me? Why am I seeing this? Because that's exactly the way the world is put together. You know, Jesus makes a statement at one point. He says, that which you do in secret will one day be yelled from the rooftops. So it's always very important to make sure the things that you're doing in secret, you don't mind them being yelled from the rooftops. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You will let everybody know?
Well, it's not that you have to let everybody know, but if it's something that you don't want everybody to know, don't do it.
Yeah, that's
tolerating. Yeah, if it's something you have to keep secret to do, chances are it's not something you're going to do, you should be doing. So have that ideal inside. So he's saying that here. Again, I'm not going to read that sentence again. We've said it too many times. But, you know, we ought to cease for one brief moment as often as we can to worship God in the depth of our being, to taste him though it be in passing, to touch him as it were by stealth. So as often as we can to worship God in the depth of our being, you know, because that's how worship happens. Worship is not something you can do. You know, in the beginning we have that idea, I'm worshiping right now. Worshiping is a response. Worshiping is a response. It's a response to the presence of God. It's a response to the grace of love. It's response to the presence of unconditioned love. Worship is a response. If the call isn't there, then worship is a mimic. You know, it's not worship yet. And so our goal is to become aware of the beloved so that worship happens in our life. Our life becomes worship. It's a natural response to being in the presence of pure love. You will not be able to do anything else when you see the beloved but worship. You will fall down. You will do your absolute surrender. You will do that one earnest, authentic pranam that you've longed for when you see your beloved. And it will be a fully automatic response. You will be so overawed. So overwhelmed by such a presence that to do anything else would be utterly impossible for you. Would be utterly impossible. So that's the goal. So that's what he's saying here, even now in the space that we're in. Always try. Always try. You know, take it just one little step further. Can I get just a little bit closer? Can I give myself permission, you know, to go a little bit closer? Since you cannot but know that God is with you in all you undertake, that he is at the very depth and center of your soul, why should you not thus pause an instant from time to time in your outward business, and even in the act of prayer, to worship him within your soul, to praise him, to entreat his aid, to offer him the service of your heart, and give him thanks for all his loving kindnesses and tender mercies. God. To say anything after that is just noise. Listen to that. Since you cannot, see, he says this is something, since you cannot but know. That means this is something that is so obvious. This is something that is so complete that you simply, you you cannot not be aware of this. You know, it's like, you know, as the sun is shining through the window. He's saying here, these are the things that you can know. Ready for them? God is with you in all that you undertake. All right? There's something to take to the bank. Never, ever, ever let your mind tell you that God has abandoned you. Never, ever, ever let your mind tell you that you are separate and apart from the Beloved. It simply cannot be possible because He is your very existence. If He was not with you, you could not exist. If He was not present in you, you could not exist.
So when you feel helpless, and that if, you know, every time the phone rings, I think, you know, they need me, probably he's been taken to the emergency room. So how do I calm myself?
Well, first of all, it's interesting, because my mother does this too. She's always assuming the worst is about to happen. You know, we'd go on hikes, and anytime we'd be anywhere, she'd be like, don't get so close to the edge. You know, constantly. And so it's a matter of what you want to make up. You see, you're making stuff up, right?
Yeah.
You're just making it up. So if you're going to make stuff up...
So that's not making up. You've seen this
could
happen.
Yeah, right.
You've seen every good thing happen, too. Why do you assume it's a bad one?
So are you saying...
a kid who is running loose, you try to do something about it.
Sure. But you don't get all nervous and caught up. Like, when the phone rings, you don't think, oh, my God, they're dead.
But are you giving us a coping mechanism?
What's that?
Is it a coping mechanism?
Well, it's a way of being in charge. Like, understand what you're doing. You're making up a problem. You're making up a worst-case scenario. And you're literally making it up.
And it gets worse and worse.
And it gets worse and worse and worse, and you start to generate a life of stress and a life of anxiety. Understand that's what you're doing. When the phone rings, it could be them saying he's fully recovered. It could be, I'm making stuff up. But literally, you are making it up. So if you're going to make stuff up, make positive stuff up. That's all. And when you...
No, but then I'm not saying in her case, but they could be... human mind is like that. It prepares for disappointment.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Who's making that rule
up? So if you're expecting good news and it doesn't happen, they say there's some emergency, then you're upset.
But don't expect anything. Expectation's always the trouble. Expectation is attachment.
Basically, it's conquering your mind, right?
No, it's just understanding that you're in charge. You're in charge. So be in charge. And if the mind is going to make up negative stuff to fill you with anxiety, stop it. My Lord, what is the point of that?
Well, you can also reverse it, too.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Make up good stuff.
No, what I'm saying is that sometimes people worry about if something's going to happen. Instead of worrying about what's going to happen, I turn around and say, if this happened, what would I do? And you figure it out, and then you stop worrying about it. Because people buy insurance just in case damage is done to the property.
Yeah, even better though, is this whole idea of presence, being present. If in this moment you can touch a place of contentment in yourself, then you will always be able to touch a place of contentment in yourself, regardless of how the conditions change. So our practice is always, right now, here, in this moment, can I be at peace? That is what I'm trying to learn from the Beloved. How to be at peace now. I can sit and think of 1,000 scenarios that I'll have to struggle to be in peace with, but that just means you're not being in peace right now. And chances are that might be why you're never in peace. So the goal of the thing is right here, right now. This is very important because the day that you die, you're going to be right here, right now. You see what I'm saying? Do you understand what I mean by that? This moment right here, right now is always right here, right now. Always. Always right here, right now. So the skills you have to be happy, to be content, to be fearless, right here, right now, are the skills you have. If they're not there, it's not circumstance that's preventing it. It's ignorance. So take this moment. This is spiritual practice, actually. This is the essence of spiritual practice. Here and now, be content. Here and now, know that God is present. Here and now, know that you are forgiven, and grace covers every conceivable thing you can think of. Here and now, know that you are at peace. Know that you are tranquil. Know that you are love itself. Know that you are intelligent. Know that you are beautiful. Know that God is your closest ally and deepest friend. Know that right now. And then if the right now happens to be presenting your death to you, so what? That's just a circumstance. I have learned to be present with the beloved here and now. And hold that space.
So, I'm also, I get so personal. Is completely out of it yesterday, you know, very uh-huh. confused.
Sure.
And he was trying to get something from the air, and he didn't know who I was, and because he wasn't like that the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, what next? How can I help him? That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want the doctor to come and check him right now. And the doctor isn't coming. So again, it's me. I'm running to the nurse and, you know, when is the doctor coming? So this whole 2 hours, I just, you know, and the doctor did come. The doctor did give him whatever was needed. They've done all the tests today. But yesterday, for a couple of hours, I was just completely, I felt helpless. And
well, that's, yeah. And there's not a right answer to it. Just put love behind everything you're doing. In a situation like that, I go back to my, what does boundary disputes have to do with the field hand? You're not in charge of when the doctor gets there.
No.
You're not in charge of what the doctor's going to do when he gets there. So why make that your business?
Yeah, and they were taken care of.
That's the thing. What are you responsible for?
Yeah.
You're just visiting your husband.
You're not having a seizure.
Yeah, you're, yeah, it's like, what are your responsibilities? What has mother given me? What your mother has given you to do at that moment is to be with your husband.
That was so glad that's enough. That he's there.
Yeah.
And not at home.
Yes.
That's when I felt, oh, so glad, because there are people, you know.
People who can do something. Yeah. Yeah. So always come to say, what is my role right now? What has mother given me that I am in charge of, that I can provide?
When will I get that calm? I've been practicing japam and all that, but the calmness was out the window.
Yes. That's that.
I think it happens because we are not detached, right?
Yeah, well, of course. It's always attachment. You know, you want to make things the way you want them to
yes.
be.
Yes.
And the way around that is to, again, this a very concrete practice. What can I do right now? I will do that. Anything else? I just mind why. Mind why. Why are you getting all frustrated about the doctor? Why are you getting all frustrated about the treatments? You're here now. If he goes, if Renal was to die in that moment,
yeah.
would he want you running around in a panic trying to arrange for doctors? Or would he like you just to be next to him holding his hand? You know, giving him the comfort of the woman who's been by his side for 50 years. Be that for him. And let the universe take care of what the universe takes care of. You can't change those things. You know, so don't be anxious about them. Be what you are. You are this person's life companion. You know, you're the reminder to them of the presence of God.
Thank you, Maharaj, for texting. That sure, every time, you know, it brought me here and, you know, gave me some calmness.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Surely. And Mother is that for you. You know, she is that. And that's where we have to stay. That's the best that we can do. In this moment, what can I do? Then do it. Do what you know you can do in the moment. Anything beyond that, you just have to let go of. That's surrender. That's surrender. So say, Thakur, I can't find the doctor. Please find the doctor for me.
See, I want that control. It's that ego.
Yeah.
But should she say, Thakur, please help me find the doctor, or Thakur, do what's best?
Thakur, well, either one.
Thakur, calm me down.
Yeah. Just put the Thakur in, put Thakur in your mind. Wherever you start is fine. He'll work with you from there. Just get him into your mind. That's all. Tell him what to do. Yell at him for not doing it. Get mad at him for doing the wrong thing. You know, jump up and down and shake your fist at him for not meeting your needs. Whatever you want.
Swamiji, I think your relationship with God is like a little naughty one. I like that. You know, like some people have, everybody has a different, you can yell at him like you're saying. Like in India, they are always in reverence, like, we are your servant. Oh, God. They put God on a pedestal. And some people like that, you know, but that doesn't make you close to God.
Yeah. No.
It's not natural.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to be where you are, and God can take you like where you are.
Yeah.
And He sees that anyway.
Yeah.
He sees that anyway. So if you're sitting there, and inside, then you're going to turn around and go outside and become something totally different. You know, He knows that. I mean, He sees that, and there's no connection happening, right? I mean, there's no connection because you're not in His presence. And you're not putting yourself in His presence,
right?
Because you're playing a game. That's why I say authenticity is one of the most important things. Truth, that alignment, that inner integrity between what you say, what you think, and what you do. That's one of the three most important things, right? And the reason that is because that's the only place that relationship can happen. That's the only place that relationship can happen with anybody, and especially with the beloved. You know? So you go as you are, and you can always know it's not good enough, and you can always know that's not the point.
And Maharaj, it's such a... just couldn't handle it, then I just turned on the YouTube and started watching Maa Sarada.
Yes.
My mind was completely in it.
Yeah.
I just completely forgot
what's
happening.
Very good, very good.
That's awesome.
Completely. And then I, you know, went to bed with some Purnananda's inspired talks.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it won't go in.
See, you ask me how, that's how. That's how you do it. You do what you need to do. And ask yourself for these answers. You know, when you're sitting there getting anxious, say, oh, Rina, wait, what are you doing? Oh, mind of Rina, why are you so disturbed? What do you need? What do you need? Imagine Thakur in your heart or mother in your heart asking you right now, what do you need, sweetie? And tell her.
Yeah.
Tell her what you need. You know? And then just be with her. Chances are that's really all you need.
Self-honesty is a very good thing. It's very hard for people to be honest with themselves.
It's very difficult.
You have people that get into difficult situations, and, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous and groups like that, what they do is, why am I doing what I'm doing? And they talk about themselves. It doesn't matter if they're honest with other people, but you have to be honest with yourself. And by being honest with yourself, you sort of calm down some.
Yeah, I mean, that's really why the practice of confession is in the Christian world anyway, this confession. And I'm not talking about the ritual of confession with a priest and all of that. I'm talking about, especially, and I think this is really good for every community, but our community too, is this emphasis of confessing your sins to one another. Confess your shortcomings to each other. Make everybody aware of your weaknesses. That's authenticity.
Well, you're talking about people who hide things.
Yeah.
If you have the courage to tell people, I have this weakness and, you know, I have this failing, and you can admit it to somebody, then it power goes down some.
Yeah.
If you hide things, it becomes stronger.
Well, yeah, it, not only that, but it affects the condition of mind. It, you know, it prevents you from being able to be one. It prevents you from being able to be authentic. It also, you can come under a grand delusion about your own self, thinking that you're really something. Oh, I'm pretty spiritual. I've got these things worked out. I've been doing this for X number of years, and I've got it going on. if you're not in the practice of recognizing your faults, you can become egotistical and think more of yourself than what's healthy for yourself. But by through the practice of putting your faults forward, saying, this is, wow, I'm really struggling with this, or today I did this to this person. The one that keeps your check, you can know exactly where you stand. You can see, oh God, I wish I wasn't like that. You become more convinced, more thoroughly knowledgeable of your need for grace.
Okay, and there's all kinds of confession.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go to a priest, you can go to a therapist, you can go to a therapy group where people confess things to each other, you can keep a journal, there's all kinds of confession.
Yeah. No, exactly, yeah. Well, there's confession with many manifestations, sure.
Yes.
But it's that idea, you know, make sure, be what you are. I think that's a very important thing, you know, being what you are. Wherever that is, you know, if you don't like where you are, the way out of it is by being where you are and going forward, you know, just, but don't let your life start to become a shell, a presentation that isn't what you are, that it's, even if it's what you want to be, that's not the way to get there. You know? The way to get there is in the quiet of prayer, in the quiet of meditation. That's the real way to get there. Okay, so here are the things that we can count on. You know, that God is with you in all that you undertake. That's one principle right there. So, you know, I'd be very comfortable if everybody wrote that down and you just put it on the mirror in your bathroom in the morning. Say, my assumption number one for this day is God is with me no matter what happens today. And you sit there while you're brushing your teeth and be like, what do you think of this, God? Ah, you know, he's watching me brush my teeth. Ah.
Well, if the thief goes to steal something and he says, God, are you with me?
Would the thief do it? That's the question, you know.
Huh?
If you are convinced that you are in the presence of the beloved,
yeah,
you're not going to let yourself do things like that.
Right.
You know, without a twist. So you have to be conscious of what twist you're going to make. Because, you know, there are times, though. Oh boy, did I say that?
What happened?
Well, there are times where, you know, like, and you have to be careful with what I'm going to say here. You have to be very mature to deal with what I'm about to say, because it's a dangerous thing if it's not handled very carefully. Thakur didn't tell Girish to stop drinking. Okay, and Girish still drank, knowing that it was drunkenness and knowing that it wasn't right. Girish knew what he was. He knew his faults through and through. So what was Thakur's teaching to him? Thakur's teaching to him was, every time you lift up a glass of red wine to drink, offer it to Mother first and thank her for the joy that you find in that drink. You know, because through doing that, he brought the light into a dark place, right? Normally we want to shut God out because we don't want to feel that conflict. We don't want to feel that pain. We don't want to feel that stuff. So we block God out, which is understandable. But the problem with that is that you become good at what you practice. And if blocking God out becomes your strength, may he help you. May he help you. It is better to say, you know, Mother, I know I'm going to do this. It hurts, but I don't feel any strength. I have no strength. Please at least give me some discrimination as I'm engaging in this with you in my mind. At least let me see how this breaks me down and how it's not a desirable thing. At least let me see the truth of this situation. Let me keep my eyes open and let me keep you fully present. And you go forward, you have your glass of wine, or you do, you know, whatever it is that you're facing. Now this is a point, I'm not going to say anymore, but you can see why you have to be very mature to practice that. But if it's practiced earnestly and sincerely, you will become a saint. That's what happened to Girish. Through that practice, he became a saint. All right. So know this number one thing, that God is with you no matter what happens with you today and all that you undertake. The second thing on your mirror, number two, he is at the very depth and center of your soul. He's at the very depth and center of your soul. So when you hear that word, depth and center of my soul, do you feel it? Then I say, depth and center of your soul. See what the mind hands you something. Take that moment to hear that and go to that place and recognize it. Recognize the presence of pure love, pure intelligence, pure existence at the heart and center of your soul, the depth and center of your soul. And he says, why should you not pause an instant from time to time in your outward business or even in the act of prayer to worship him within your soul? Because that's what it happens. When you recognize him, worship happens. That's what that feeling is. We call that feeling love, which really is what it is. But it also can be called worship. That's what worship is. It's that manifestation of pure love in response to the presence of God. And so just to become aware of that presence brings worship. It brings worship. So enjoy worship. Every now and then throughout your day, just take a moment. The depth and center of my soul. I see you. I can barely see you. Ah. Thank you, Ma. And then make your cornbread.
Ma, it's better to see it within ourselves than outside.
You can't see it outside authentically until you see it inside. That's what I'm going to say about that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try and even have the fun of pretending sometimes. But the truth is, if you can't find it, if you're not touching it in yourself, then you're acting on the outside, because the outside is your reflection. The outside is your reflection. So if you can't find it in yourself, you're not going to see it in the reflection authentically. That's why all of our work happens in the depth of our practice. You know? To worship him within your soul, to praise him. What's it mean to praise him? Just tell him like it is. I love that feeling. I love a good meditation, Ma. I love, oh my God, I feel so at peace when I'm in your presence. That is so beautiful. That's praise, you know. It's realizing the beauty of the beloved, realizing how close that closeness and everything that it inspires. The understanding, the tranquility, the peace of mind, the confidence, the fearlessness. All of those things are praise. To be fearless, that's the greatest praise ever. To be unselfish, that's the greatest praise ever. That's the greatest worship ever. To praise him, to entreat his aid. Oh my God, I need you. To offer him the service of your heart. There you go, that's a beautiful one. The service of your heart. That means you love the things that God loves. That's how you give the service of your heart. Service of the heart is actually not something you do. Service of the heart is acting on inspiration. It's getting yourself into the presence of God and doing what's inspired in you. It's not having something that you're going to decide, I'm going to do this as service of the heart. That's a good place to begin, but that's not where we're going in this. Where we're going in this is being in the presence of God and doing what's inspired. You know, that's how you become spontaneously perfect. Like that. That's why realized souls can do nothing wrong. Because everything is done from that quiet place of inspiration. They don't act on will. They have no will. They don't act on ego. They have no ego. They act on inspiration. You know, mother calling, mother prompting. It's worship.
Mother, this his loving kindness. It was just yesterday, I didn't call these people, but some of your devotees, you know, one of them, they called me, they were ready to come and take me to the hospital in the middle of the night. She said, just call me.
Yes.
There were others, you know, oh God, I mean, it was so touching. So that's Thakur looking after me again, me. That's his, then you're not alone.
Yeah, and you're not. That's the thing. It gives me, you don't know how happy it makes me to hear that people are calling you and wanting to be a part. Because to me, that is what we will become. That is my dream for, I don't have dreams for the center, but I have a dream for the center. And that's what we become. Yeah. That we, none of us can ever say that we're alone. That we are dedicated to each other. We serve the beloved in each other. We're looking for ways always of helping and reaching out and encouraging. You know, and so when I hear things like that from you, that is such a beautiful gift to me to hear that is happening, you know. Because that is everything. That is everything. And give him thanks for all his loving kindness and tender mercies. That's it. So to do all of those things, really all of those things are because of the presence of God. You give him thanks for his loving kindness and tender mercies because you're aware of his loving kindness and tender mercies, right? Yeah, all of these things is because of God. What offering is there more acceptable to God than thus throughout the day to quit the things of outward sense? To quit the things of outward sense, the things, this external space, and to withdraw to worship him within the secret places of the soul. So that's why this inner shrine is so important. We have to establish that inner shrine, because that inner shrine is ultimately where we're going to be, where we're going to live. When you die, that's where you want to be sitting. Mm-hmm. You know, when this body falls off, you'll want to have that room well established in the secret places of the soul to go in there and call his name and have a beautiful place that you can watch the body slip away and feel no change. There will be no change for you. The body will slip away, but that's incidental. You'll come to realize. And that's why Thakur says, I think that's why he says that all of us, this is our last birth if you've come here, is because of that, you know, that you sit in that place of unchanging, the place of the soul, and the body comes and goes. And as soon as you realize the body's going and nothing is changing, nothing is different in your experience of self, that's when your realization dawns, because that one little push is enough to be like, oh my God, the body's falling off, but I'm perfectly fine. Why is that? It must be true. And all of your study and all of your knowledge of the scriptures suddenly goes off like a huge firecracker. And understanding dawns, you know, wow, I really am a soul. I really am eternal. The body really wasn't me. And as soon as that very real experience catches fire, you're free. The rest is chocolate syrup. Oh my gosh, it's 12:40. Okay, so we'll stop there. Oh, let me finish the other sentence. Besides, by doing so, we destroy the love of self. We destroy the love of self. It's a low S, low cap, low case S. What are the things of self? The things of the senses and mind and body that we enjoy. We let go of those things. We destroy the love of self, which can subsist only among the things of sense, and of which these times of quiet retirement with God rids us well nigh unconsciously. So, yes, so you don't have to take care of all your problems, saying, put yourself in the beloved's presence and put yourself before God. Everything will change. Everything will change. And you won't even be aware of it. That's the thing. And you'll be saved from the ego that would have grown if you had been aware of it. And if you had associated it with your practice and with your effort, then you would be nowhere. But in this place, you're home because you're free. And everything is fine. Everything is beautiful. All right, so do that today as much as you can, and don't stop.